Welcome to another edition of Hockey the Podcast. It's still on lockdown, but that makes it the perfect time to bring you up to speed with everything in the world of hockey and beyond. We kicked off the quarantine session, so to speak, last week with a host of interviews. This time around, we've got another fantastic guest on the way. But first and foremost, I've got a fantastic co-host, not next to me, because of course, got to keep ourselves isolated, but he is in the comforts of his own home once again, Tyron Jabu Barnard. Tyron, how are you doing? Has quarantine gotten to you yet, or are you coping relatively well?
Thanks, Derek. It's always good to be here and good to chat hockey. And obviously, the circumstances leave us in a slightly different situation, but the quarantine has been a good time for family bonding, let's say. But not a good time for hockey, so looking forward to this chat tonight so we can dive back into the world of hockey for a little bit.
Yeah, I must say my braaiing skills have improved immeasurably over these last couple of days. I've never been the greatest of braaiers, but I tell you what, the meal I delivered a couple of nights ago was worthy of 3 Michelin stars at least, according to my books anyway. But we're learning new skills that we never knew that we had. You've got 2 little ones, I've got 1. I think that's probably the toughest part, is keeping them entertained. My 4-year-old daughter Ash, she understands quarantine and lockdown. In fact, she made her way to my studio at home the other day and delivered her own little radio bulletin to her listeners, in inverted commas, and she was actually talking about the lockdown. It was quite interesting to hear. But she kind of grasps it, but not fully just yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, Colby's only 5 months old, so he doesn't know what's going on. He just feels like it's an extended maternity leave for his mom. But Callum doesn't quite grasp it fully. Doesn't understand when dad's working from home, because obviously the day job still runs. But I think he likes having the parents around, and it might be a little bit weird when we do have to go back to work for him to adjust to that. But it's been a good experience for him in terms of having mom and dad around. And look, we've all watched probably enough of Lippy and Paw Patrol to be able to sing the songs off by heart.
There's a slight giggle in the background because it is our guest. Without further ado, let's introduce him. We can continue with this conversation, but tell us, who do we have on the show tonight?
Yeah, I thought, what a better way to go. You know, we spoke just a few episodes back with Lisa Dietliffs about the postponement of the Olympics. We spoke with Rusty Peterson about the postponement of the Olympics. So we've heard from the women's team. We've heard from the men's team. I thought, what about hearing from the third team of South Africans that were going to go to the Olympics? And that's the umpiring team. And what better person than South Africa's current number one and golden whistle for FIH with more than 100 caps, Peter Wright. So, Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on board.
Thanks. Yeah, good to be here. Good to have action in lockdown.
Yeah, and where does lockdown find you right now, Peter?
Yeah, well, I'd say we're all stuck at the moment. I've moved in with my mum for a bit, so it's just the two of us. I'm a lowly bachelor again, so the two of us have been stuck in a small townhouse in Centurion for the last 2 weeks.
And are you at least letting her do things, or are you giving her, blowing the whistle and calling her offside or for dangerous play when she goes into the kitchen to get an extra chocolate?
I'll make sure she's far away, because she might actually take you on with that as well. we have been doing an online Excel course, and I must say my temper reminds me of some of the players we have to deal with quite a bit as well. So, thank goodness there's a garden that she can go out and actually catch her breath every now and again.
You know, it's amazing the resilience of South Africans. And yeah, we've been through a lot of tough times over the years. And what always amazes me is how we adapt to the situations through humor. And the memes that have been going around have been phenomenal. And it's not great to make such a light-hearted response to such a serious affair. But of course, you can kind of rely on laughter. And one of those things I heard you talking, Tyron mentioning, maybe going into the kitchen to get chocolate or something. Probably the best one I've seen so far. I'm not saying I'm eating a lot, but I do have a tan line from the fridge light.
And hopefully the fridge is not swearing back at you now.
But yeah, it's been very, very tough from a personal level and from a professional level. Because I mean, hockey isn't your be all and end all. I mean, you've still got a business that you've got to be involved in as well.
That's right. And although hockey is my passion, it also is my business as well. And it's hit us quite hard. I'm one of quite a few people that are heavily involved in hockey as a business. I'm the retailer and the importer of a local brand of Malik. And it's hit us hard that for the last 2 weeks, we've had absolutely no sales because with schools being off and this being our prime season of all the festivals, clinics and tournaments that go on, it's really the official start of our season, but also the main selling part. So I think, I mean, I'm only one of the brands. I'm sure all of us are really taking quite a big knock at this time of the year.
And it's actually, you know, it's we're sitting talking to you on the eve of the Easter weekend when this goes out. It'll probably be maybe Good Monday, Easter Monday, Family Monday, whatever that day is actually called. But it's a crazy time actually to be talking to someone for hockey, because right now there should be all the hockey festivals going on. The outdoor season should be in full flow. Club seasons are starting. Schools are preparing for their massive competitions. And instead, we're all sitting at home and making fitness videos and stuff like that. I mean, what's the way forward for the hockey brands in the country?
Well, I think it's forcing us to really think out the box, and we're all going to have to do something really different. I've been chatting to a few of the guys, and we're just trying to say, well, one is our prime season is gone, so what's to follow? Are the school provincial tournaments going to go ahead? Because that would be number two on our list, is that June, July festival period. And there's talk of the school holidays now being cancelled and the kids having school right through that time as well. So obviously from a business side, we're really hoping that the provincial tournaments will take place. Fingers crossed that they do. We're really nervously waiting for number one to talk to us tonight and hopefully give us some light on that. Also being involved on a hockey admin side on the Northern's executive, I know from an SA hockey side, that they're really nervous as well for what lies ahead on the provincial scene and the club scene, because the sooner the clubs start playing, the sooner we can get provincial hockey back up and running as well. So from a senior level, it also, you know, bodes a hell of a lot of questions and a lot of nervous anticipation. I think from brands, we're trying to come up with two or three scenarios of what we could do if scenario A, B, or C, but easier said than done as well, because we really feel like we have no starting point for that.
Yeah, there's no question. It's a domino effect, and that's what we've seen when it slowly started to take its course, the lockdown, and slowly but surely sports were involved in the disappearance of action, of any action, so to speak. And I suppose that's exactly what's going to happen when we start building things back up, when we do manage to get things back on track. It's going to be a slow rebuilding phase to manage to get everything back. And then also, you've got to wonder to yourself, I mean, not just from the hockey front, but will certain sports or events that were postponed, is it too late now to reschedule them? I mean, will you have to be cancelled altogether? As you mentioned, the clubs, the schools, etc. And it just snowballs.
100%. It's like you say, it's that domino effect as well, because without club hockey happening, well, let's even go back a level. Without school hockey, there's no schools provincial hockey. Without club hockey, there's no senior provincial hockey. There'd be no SA hockey tournaments as well. And let's leave, even if you leave out the financial side of it from the hockey brands, but also from SA hockey, each province would have specific staff that they would need to have to pay and financial commitments. And again, like you said, that domino effect goes all the way up as well. And then you look on the playing side, they've just announced internationally that the Indoor World Cup is they have a venue in Belgium for next year. Those qualification tournaments need to happen this year as well. You've got the Junior World Cup that's on next year as well. So again, there's more qualification tournaments. And you just wonder where it's going to stop, because we've got to try and fit in the Pro League that has fallen by the wayside. And, you know, like you say, from the top right down to primary hockey, there's just going to be this hell of a snowball effect. And either there's going to be a hell of a busy 3 or 4 months to try and squash everything in, or perhaps it's going to be that out-the-box thinking of hockey becoming all year round sport, which it generally is at the moment, but maybe more officially that you might see tournaments being played in October, November, and possibly early December. So it could really show signs of some new thinking and some new ideas, and really force us into a new way of doing things.
Yeah, Peter, and I think it opens up a very interesting dynamic in the sense that we now know the Olympic Games are happening in July next year. The World Cup will happen mere 12 to 18 months after that, which will be an unbelievably small gap. But the bigger challenge, probably from a South African point of view, is we'll have the Indoor World Cup in February. How many of the outdoor players who are going to the Olympics will be allowed to go to that? How do we split our resources? Because, again, it is a costly endeavor. You know, we're also going to try and get tours to get pre-tournament stuff going. We need to fit in another IPT somewhere so that the squad can be selected. So it offers a very testing, let's call it chess game, to try and fit the international sporting puzzle together and then to filter that down. Are you excited by this challenge, or does it rather give you a little bit of sleepless nights?
It's a yes and a no side as well. And I think that the tough part is that for a lot of us, and players included, coaches, etc., umpires, we had our minds set on July, and you kind of set your whole life up from a training point and putting all your plans into place. This unforeseen circumstances come on board, and obviously I think no one has got any doubt in their mind that the postponement was the right decision. But you're right, it's a whole mind shift again to change. I mean, there are a few of us, and I'm sure quite a few players as well, that we're going to be calling it a day at the end of Tokyo. So now it's an interesting challenge that lies ahead as well. And obviously, as anyone involved at that level, you don't want to throw this opportunity away. So it's another year of reassessing and putting things back into planning mode. I think we're lucky from the official side. We all received an email from the FIH last week to say they've agreed to keep the panel of officials on for next year, which is a huge relief, I think, from us as officials, that we don't have to go through a new selection process, et cetera, towards next year. But I'm sure from a playing side, it's going to give a lot of the older players perhaps more sleepless nights as well, that they've got to hold out that much longer. Like I said earlier, I was due to retire because the FIH have got a 47-year-old age gap or age cap on the officials. So, and I turned 47 in October, so I was supposed to be retiring at the end of that. And I suppose, yeah, the one good thing is the FIH have kindly given a bit of leeway to the age thing, but I suppose it just opens up new avenues and new opportunities for us as well.
Well, Peter, let's talk about that specifically. You were going to the Olympics. You are currently seen as South Africa's top umpire, whether you'll say it or not. I mean, obviously, what a great way it would have been to end your career this year, but to end your international career. But obviously, we get to delay another year. We've spoken to Rusty Peterson, and he's very much in the same situation. Now, what does that do for you? Does it give you an extra spring in your step that you got another year, or does it make you feel a little bit like, oh man, another year to go?
No, I think 100% it's that extra spring in the step and another opportunity to have another go at it. You do have that bittersweet taste of competition and being involved at the highest level, but I think that drive just to still be involved is always going to be there as well. And if you have that thought of, bugger another year, then you really shouldn't be there. And your best interests of the game at heart are really, you're never going to achieve that. So I'm really excited. I mean, I have a few personal goals that I'd like to achieve, and this perhaps gives me more of an opportunity. It gives us more time, a few more games under the belt, and you know, I might be lucky enough to hit the 150 mark. You know, so those are perhaps things that I never thought would happen, and it just shows that sport's a funny thing. And I suppose in this stage, life's a funny thing. You can't predict anything. And when you least expect it, the changes come.
And the other thing, I mean, from a personal point of view, just in terms of, it was the Olympics. It was around the corner, Japan, this massive, beautiful country on the other side of the world. I'm sure that would have been disappointing. I mean, you traveled plenty. But to miss out on the Olympics for now and not being guaranteed the fact that you'll be involved in a year's time.
Yeah, no, 100%. That wasn't, and all our, I mean, we've been really lucky with this Pro League. So a lot of the umpires were involved with the Pro League. So it involved a lot of traveling for us, and that really gets you to the point. So we were really on a plane to peak for July, and that was really awesome. I think for us, it's the relief that the FIH had sent that email out to the officials to say, right, don't worry, you're all in for next year. So it gives us that calming effect perhaps as well. But again, brilliant. It puts the pressure on us that we have to make sure that we're at 100% or even 150% by the time we get to July next year. So perhaps we'll use it as experience that we're older and wiser rather than fitter.
Well, Peter, obviously now we're talking the Olympic Games, which for many people is the pinnacle of hockey. Of course, for many others, it is the World Cup. So those two are seen as the two peak trophies, the most important one. Which one for you gets the nod? The World Cup, obviously for the men, it'll be in India, or the Olympics?
Well, that is a tough one as well. It was always one of my dreams to try and get to both of those, and I've been lucky enough to do another trip to India. I've done, I think it was probably trip number 7 or 8 for the World Cup, and it was a wonderful experience. And just to be part of that, it's such an eye-opener to see at that level. I mean, I've been lucky enough to do 2 Commonwealth Games and a few other fairly large tournaments, but nothing quite of that stature. So the World Cup was an absolute wow factor. And I suppose being in India, what better place can you be to have a world-class event? But I think the Olympics must be the pinnacle, I would imagine, as well. That's a tough one because the World Cup is your hockey people and your hockey family. And again, a lot of talk in the hockey is all around the hockey family. So in India, was great because you're the hockey family, whereas at the Olympics, it's the world sport. So they really come with 2 very different vibes. But I think the hype of Tokyo and the Olympics, which, I mean, I haven't been to Olympics, unfortunately, so I can't really compare. But I can just imagine that hype must put it above anything else.
No, awesome. And we're glad that you are still going to get the opportunity next year, provided the world is healthy and safe to go and experience that. How much of an impact did it make, or how much of a desire did it make to you, because your brother has been obviously another golden whistle umpire, but he's been to a bunch of Olympic Games. I mean, did that make you a little bit competitive, or did it encourage you that you wanted to get there? Or
Yeah, I think it was definitely an encouragement side as well. I mean, obviously, I don't think too many people are going to break his record of, I think, 5 Olympic Games. That's something that, yeah, I think we're going to take a few years for someone to break that record. So just to be able to get to 1 is incredible. And again, I think there's perhaps no comments column, and no one can take that away from you, that you've actually been to Olympics. But having had John as a role model, it really gives you something to look forward to. It gives you something to fight towards as well, and shows that if you put in the work at the ground level, all the opportunities that are there. And I think for any young aspiring official, it's a wonderful carrot that almost dangles in front of you that shows years of hard work and you can reach the ultimate prize.
It's a magnificent carrot to have. And there's no question that it's also great for you to be have someone so close to you who's able to guide you through the peaks and troughs of the world of international sport, especially when it comes to umpiring in the hockey world.
Most definitely, is you're right. And I think like any top sportsman, sports official, he's had his fair share of highs and lows. And perhaps for him, the World Cups have been a better playing ground for him. I think he did, of his four World Cups, he did the last three finals. So that was his pinnacle, perhaps, whereas the Olympics, he had a bit of a rough ride. And to be able to sit and talk about those things as well, because obviously everyone remembers the highs, but people like to forget the lows quite quickly as well. And unfortunately, that's sport and that's life. And there's always got to be that one person who's going to make the blunder or be on the wrong side of the teams. And I think we all know that in sport, the officials, the umpires or the referees are the easiest ones to be on the receiving end of the unhappy team. So you've really got to have broad shoulders. And to be able to sit with someone and talk about how to handle those situations has really been a great help.
And Peter, on top of that, you mentioned the fact that you're on the receiving end of the bad comments from the players, but also the fans too. So, I mean, umpires and referees in general, umpires, referees, etc., across all sports, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's always, if they are mentioned, then it's generally for bad reasons, and if they do a good job, then you won't hear about them. I mean, it takes a special kind of person with a very, very thick skin to decide to make a career out of it.
100%. I think you've hit the nail on the head there with the thick skin. I think what drives us is again, we go back to the hockey family. We've really, I think most people have made a huge group of really close friends. And I mean, even more so in the recent years in the introduction of the Pro League, where now the men and women are doing a lot more together as well. So in the past, it was just a men's group of umpires. And now it's the men and the women, and especially for the Pro League, you get to, I mean, last year, for example, myself and Annelise, the South African lady, flew to New Zealand for a weekend for one game. So you really get to bond with these guys and become really good friends. And especially the country, the different countries, that and guys from different countries. And I've got probably one of my best mates is the little Indian umpire. And I mean, we've been together on the circuit for about 15 years now. And you really count a lot of these guys as of your closest friends. So I think that keeps you going. The ability to laugh at ourselves, we have to, because like you said, we can always be on the receiving end of that. And I think a bit of console for us is that we're going to upset 50% of the people 100% of the time, because there's always going to be one team that's upset with something that we do, be it right or wrong. So you're right. We have a big sense of humor. You have to. But then again, when we are wrong and we do make mistakes, because we have a big video package that follows us. And obviously with social media and TV these days, everything being broadcast, our errors do get shown to the world. And you have to be big enough to take it on the chin and sometimes to own up to those things, that we do make mistakes because we are human as well. So I think that's been big thing. And within our group of umpires, the guys aren't scared to call each other out, or maybe aren't scared to assist each other to say, hey, you made a mistake there, and maybe try this or maybe do that. I think that's part of the curve and part of life and part of sport, where you need those guys that are big enough to tell you when you're wrong, and for us to accept and take it on the chin and just make sure that we better next time.
Peter, South Africa has a wonderful umpiring history in all sport. I mean, if you look at rugby, you got the likes of Andre Watson, Craig Bear, Marius Jonker, you know, even Jaco Pepo, although there's some countries that didn't like him after the World Cup. You look at cricket and we got Murray Erasmus, one of the top in the world. Even in football, Daniel Bennett was rated one of the best umpires or refs at the 2014 FIFA World Cup. I don't remember which year it was. And in hockey, of course, we've had your brother, Michel Hubert, Annelise Rostron, yourself, Dion Nell. Why are South Africans such good umpires?
Yeah, that is an interesting one. And I think we go to our system and our structures, and we really, and again, being an amateur sport, everyone's so quick to complain about the structures and the committees and the setups. But I think we've really been lucky over the last 22 and probably even 30 years to have really dedicated people at grassroots level and involved in the different rules and technical committees. I mean, if we think back to the Paul Richards, who used to be the general manager of SA Hockey, and the likes of Emil Sturley, who ran the women's setup, and there's so Bobby Gagels, there's so many names that come to the fore. And then in more recent, semi-recent times, the Gavin Cullens and the Toby Tatliffs, and then again, even more recent of the Clive McMurrays and Murray Leeses, who've turned to from umpiring into umpire management. And we just have such strong characters that the young umpires can look up to, the people that are very approachable and more than willing to give their time, and also give their time at the lower levels and the lowest of levels. So we have a lot of our senior panel. I mean, Annelise, for example, is the umpire manager at under 18s. So those girls that go to under 18 RPT get to learn from one of the best in the world. And that's just a wonderful opportunity. And when we look at our Pretoria leagues as well, and I've done third and fourth league games with a young umpire. John has done the same on a Sunday, for example. And I'm sure all over, Dion Nell in East London, Gary Simmons in Durban, Sean Rappaport in Cape Town, they're not bigger than the game. They're very humble and they're prepared to give to anyone that is out there as well. And I think that's the culture and the ethos that the umpires have developed. And it's that culture that's come for years and years and years, and luckily we've been able to hold on to that. And I think that's something that we must cherish and we must fight to really make sure that we keep.
Peter, you...
Yeah, I was just going to say that question actually came from Keely Dunn from FH Umpires. She, when I asked her, I told her I was going to talk to you. She said, obviously, your first question for you was, who's your favorite Canadian online umpiring personality? But she then also said she's just completely astounded by how top quality South Africa keeps producing in terms of umpires, when in truth we don't have the funding to pay these umpires an excessive amount of money. And I think you've touched on that. And how do you get fired up? You go to an Olympics, you go to an FIH Pro League, you go and umpire Australia against New Zealand or India, and then you come home and you umpire St. Albans fourth team versus, I don't know, Old Ed's seventh team on a Sunday morning. I mean, do you still find the great joy in those opportunities?
I think the love for the game and the willingness or the desire to give back is what really drives us as well. And I mean, we're lucky enough to come from a hockey family. So my dad was involved with hockey so we grew up on the side of the field as well. And just to be able to give back, and that's the hardest. I mean, it is a challenge, and there's no doubt about that. And it's probably harder to do that Old Albanians 3 and Old Ed 7 game than it is an international game, because the skill level is definitely not there. And what I'm trying to achieve is very different to what the teams are trying to achieve. So that does create even more perhaps frustration sometimes as well, where I've got to realize what I'm doing, and perhaps they've also got to realize who's behind the whistle. But I think we've all got to realize that if you don't do your bit at the bottom, and if you're too good for those games, you're going to fall pipe at the top as well. And I think that's the one thing. And if we look over the last 20 years, we've always had very humble umpires. So it forces, you know, the culture that we've instilled in everyone is that you're never bigger than the game. And if you are, that you soon get found out. And unfortunately, the paths maybe go in a different direction.
Peter, we mentioned the fact about having a thick skin, and it's a very unforgiving job. And yeah, you just alluded to how it came about, coming from a very, very big hockey family. But was it just a natural progression, you becoming an umpire? Did you really seek to become one, or was it just something that you kind of just easily slotted into, given what had happened before?
I think you're probably right. It was almost a natural progression. I remember umpiring at school when I was in the good old days, standard eight, whatever that grade 10, I think, and just wanting to help out with the under 14 E's and F's. And
oh, I love it. I love one of those. I'm also one of those. The standards.
So it's been, I mean, I've been umpiring, it feels like forever as well. And it's just part of the thing. I mean, I was maybe naive or stupid because I really buggered around quite a bit when I should have taken umpiring a lot more seriously than I did, because I thought it would be quite cool to manage and coach. And I did that for perhaps 5 or 6 years too long as well. So I think the timing was just perhaps right as well when an opportunity came, and it was by absolute chance that we were hosting an Africa Cup, Africa Club Champs, actually, at the old Technikon Pretoria. And like you said earlier, Tyrant funding was an issue. So poor Gary Simmons was nominated to come up from Durban, and Zane McLaren was the Johannesburg umpire. And there was no money to bring Gary up, so we needed a second umpire. And I was luckily the next in line and being local. So I got the opportunity and got my FIH badge at that tournament. So it's perhaps how life throws you these gems every now and again as well. So perhaps it's that lucky break that I got, and that then made me realize I need to take this a bit more seriously.
Peter, obviously now, I mean, if according to FIH's TMS, you're sitting on 132 caps. Is there one that stands out in your memory as the most special?
Yeah, that's an easy one. I think it must be doing John's last game with him at the World League semi-finals at Wits in 2017, I think it was. So again, it's like you say, those John and I had never done an international tournament together. We'd done a lot of local games and a lot of local test matches. And we obviously knew he was going to be retiring at that tournament. And I hadn't been nominated for the tournament. I was due to go to the Pan Am Cup in the USA a week after that. So I thought, oh, well, there we go. I'm never going to get that opportunity to blow a senior tournament with him. And true as Bob, about 4 days before the tournament, the Australian umpire pulled out. And it's quite a funny story to that, because it's about the third time I've replaced this particular umpire at different tournaments around the world. Maybe it was just calm, and I got pulled in at the last minute and ended up doing the John's last game with him. So I think that's really got to be very special. I mean, obviously, our families were there. My mom was there, obviously beaming like a Cheshire cat, you can imagine. And all our mates, because it was local. So I think that really stands out as probably the highlight of my career. So.
Well, and I was at that game. It was actually quite a surprisingly one-sided game with Belgium.
Wasn't it just, yeah. Who would have thought the Germans rolled over and played dead like that? Eh?
But if I remember correctly, I think you won the card count in that game against John.
It's not often. That's probably the first time. So maybe he had forgotten that, or the kids perhaps had stolen his cards when they walked out for the anthems, I think. But, it's not often that happens. I mean, he has the nickname of Captain Grumpy, and that's for a reason as well. And we definitely are chalk and cheese when we come to umpiring, and probably personalities in life as well. So,
I think it's the good balance. I mean, you got good cop, bad cop, and what, grumpy cat and happy cat, so it works.
Yeah, you're right. We'll be lucky. It hasn't got us into trouble yet, so maybe that is a good thing.
Yeah, John might not talk to me much after this, but it's okay.
Nothing new.
I'll send him flowers. It's fine. Peter, obviously, we're looking at a world where Peter and John Wright won't be umpiring as South African umpires in the near future. Who's the youngsters coming up that you think are headed for umpiring greatness in South Africa?
Well, I mean, I think like we were saying earlier, we're really lucky to have a big pool of talented youngsters that are coming up as well. One that came, obviously, Sean Rappaport, I mean, he must have been really close to getting onto the Olympic panel. He's just been included in the Pro League panel as well last year and this year. So I think he was really unlucky, and I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him as well. There's a young gentleman Leland Marku from Pretoria as well. And I mean, there's the Peter Calders of the world. On the women's side, there's a really exciting prospect in Lizay Taylor and Bunny Fenter. So I think we're going to have South Africans on that international circuit for a long time to come, which is really exciting.
Peter, this
fantastic stuff.
We keep on interjecting, given the fact that we're not face to face. But Peter, I mean, it's going to be a very tough question to answer. I know that, but you've mentioned one of them now, having umpired with John. I'm sure that's right up there. But you must have some unbelievable memories over the years. And I always find that officials in sports have a lot more fun than the players, because of course there's as much pressure, if not more so, to do well during the course of a game, but you do have far more opportunities to let your hair down to a respect, as opposed to the players. It's not so much 24/7 fitness; it's maybe 23/7 fitness, maybe 22. But yeah, I mean, if you can look back at some of the highlights over the course of your career.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. Over 10 to 15 odd years, there have been some great ones, and quite a phrase word or a thing for the umpiring is pairings. So there's a big drive to put you with people that you're comfortable in umpiring with as well. And I mean, one particular one, and I go to my little Indian friend Raghu, who we met at a youth development seminar in 2000. So I mean, that's how far back we go. And it's just when you have a friend and a colleague on the other side that you know you can go to battle with. And those are the special memories as well. And we don't need to see each other for 2 or 3 years, perhaps. But when you get together, you just have, it's like a brotherhood. And you have these friends that are just there all along. I mean, I have an affection for Asia, because for some reason I've spent a hell of a lot of time there. I've been to Malaysia probably 4 or 5 times, and India 7 or 8 times. I mean, I think I did one of the last tournaments in Pakistan before all the nonsense hit the fan there as well. So, you know, I think traveling to Asia and experiencing different cultures has been really, really special as well. And obviously my love for Indian food has grown, and the love for exploring those countries as well. I mean, I have a bit of a explorer spirit in me as well. So I'm not one to sit in the hotel all day and, you know, watch movies, etc. I want to get out and see the different sights and sounds of wherever we are as well. And I mean, for example, last year I was in Peru for the Pan Am Games. And I mean, just to be in Lima was incredible. And then also to be able to get to Machu Picchu was, you know, I stayed on an extra few days. So there's some of those bucket list items that you get to do. And without hockey, I'd never have been able to do them, because it's taken me to places. I mean, I've been to China and Australia, New Zealand, you name it, most of Europe. And it's life-changing experiences and obviously memories that are going to be there forever. I mean, the Commonwealth, my first Commonwealth Games in India, in Delhi, that was really special. I mean, you had a stadium that seats almost 40,000 people. And India were playing in the final against the Aussies, and full stadium. And then at halftime, they were 4-0 down or 5-0 down, and everyone left. And there was no one in the stadium for the second half. So, you know, that's those type of experiences that are really special. And something really random, like, was when we were in the USA and we got to go to an Amish family and got to experience the Amish way of life. And I mean, it's just things that, you know, I don't think, there are probably not even movies around those things. You know, and the gentleman of the head of the household let me put on his Sunday best, and off I went on his little scooter and got to do a trek around the house. And it's just those special memories that you get to keep forever.
Were you almost converted to the Amish lifestyle?
No.
you don't have to worry about offending our Amish listeners, because
it was the whoopie pie thing got to me as well, when I told the lady that one bite of that and I'd have diabetes. And she said, no, the encyclopedia says that you can't get diabetes from that. And I thought, oh, that just... the real rude awakening that they're still in encyclopedia, so we're far away from that. Thank you.
I can tell you, Peter, I mean, we've never spent any time together. We've never met face to face, but I have spent plenty of time with John And if it runs in the right genes, then yeah, you'd make a terrible Amish person, because I know for a fact John would.
Yeah, I couldn't. That Rammstein year would last a lot longer than it should, I think.
All right. So, Peter, we're getting to the end. We know you have a lot of things you want to go do, like probably bake banana bread, as most of us have tried in this lockdown. But I just wanted to say, from our side, obviously, we are very grateful for the work you've done in SA Hockey. We, you know, in the years, it's a decade now that I've been writing about hockey in the country, and you've always taken time to chat to me. But more importantly, I've always seen you take time for anybody who wants to ask. Both you and your brother sit down and chat. And, you know, when I was first trying to get going, Malik were very happy to come along and give away sticks to followers and stuff like that. So from my side, thank you. This is a small way we can say thank you. And I'm very, very grateful that at least we get another 12 months of international hockey for you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks to you guys. I mean, you're doing a wonderful job in promoting our small sport. We all know what potential hockey's got. And I mean, I think you guys are just really helping that cause by getting it out to more and more people. So thank you too for what you guys are doing.
Thanks, Peter. I mean, you know, it goes without saying. We just do it for the love of it. And really, there's no thanks necessary. It's thanks to the guests who make the content so special. But yeah, you're not getting away without taking part in the dreaded one-question quiz. Many have tried. Most have failed. Kim failed last time. Did Rusty come right, Ty? Can you remember?
No, Rusty.
With the question you're going to be careful if you ask if Rusty comes right. Yeah. we were students together, so I could spill a few beans. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
Sorry, Rusty.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, Pete. Peter Wright is also the name of a darts player from Scotland.
Yes,
very, very well-known player. Renowned for his Mohican hairstyle. They change color for every tournament, etc. What is his nickname?
My golly.
And I'll give you a clue. His nickname, it's derived from the designs his wife adds to tattoos and not from the drink. So the nickname has the same, it's another name for a drink, a specific drink, but it's not because it's not named after the drink. It's named because of the tattoos that he has based on this animal.
Ah, golly. I think you got the animal part right as well, because I forget, my mugshot comes up as him, and that's not something I want to be too proud about. Jeez, you've stumped me there, Derek. I have no idea. But
Peter, I must tell you, he is the current world champion. He won the world championship on the 1st of January. So,
it's
not a bad association.
Yeah.
Jeez. You mean you want to see me in Tokyo with a whole lot of tattoos down my arm?
And it's and something that a person could pick up were they to go, South Africa, it's pretty prevalent, but particularly in Australia, if you go, you've got to be very wary of this animal doing this to you.
Is it the scorpion? No, it wouldn't be.
I was going to say, I think it's a pretty big South African animal.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a massive South African animal. In terms of the thing that it does, though, you do hear it quite a bit. Out in the bush, it happens a lot.
Snake bite.
There we go. You got it.
Oh, geez. The moment you mentioned drink, obviously I got that right. Yeah,
you eventually got there by hook or by crook, sure. But we'll give it to you. Well done.
Help from my friends, yeah.
Peter, it's been great having you on the show. And, we just got word. I don't know if you've heard the news, but during this interview, the lockdown's been extended by 14 days.
Oh, my soul.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to be an interesting. So I've been getting dizzy running around the washing line and the door, a whole 20-meter loop every day. So it's going to have to carry on for a bit longer.
We've got a friend, Darren Brahm, and he's taken motivation. He did a 5K in his garden about a week or two ago, and now he's going to take it up a notch, and he's planning on doing, and whether it happens or not, because he says he's actually picked up injuries from the constant turning around, as you mentioned, but he was planning on doing the two oceans route in his back garden.
Oh my.
And
my golly,
And I think it's you're looking at around an 8 meter by 8 meter area that he's going to be covering.
Oh my, that is brave. Yeah, that's almost the size of my little my route, and I think I do 160 laps of this just to get 2 k's in. So I'd hate to know what that poor guy's going to have to do.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I've found out how my treadmill switches on, which I'm quite chuffed about. These last 2 weeks have taught me amazing things, how to wash dishes.
So it's not just a clothes source anymore.
No, it's been promoted.
You've been walking the dog on there.
Yeah.
He's getting his vitality points, puts his watch on his dog's wrist.
Yes.
It makes us think out the box, doesn't it?
Peter, thank you so much, man. It's been great to you. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news with regards to the lockdown, but hold tight, stay safe, stay indoors, and here's to a very, very successful Olympics next year, and your first.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, and then just a shout out to everyone who perhaps gets to listen to this, to stay indoors, stay safe, and the quicker we get this over and done with, hopefully the quicker we can all get back to work again and get back to normal lives.
Excellent.
So thanks, guys. Yeah. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, Peter. You too.
All right. Awesome. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, man.
Thanks some more.
Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Oh, what a guy, Ty.
Yeah, Derek, I think we've been blessed. We've been really blessed in South Africa with the quality of umpires, and I mean that across all sports. We really, really have amazing umpires, and I think it's probably down to the nature of South Africans. We rise to the challenge. We're able to keep our composure in the darkest storm, and that's probably something we're going through right now. We are in a bit of a storm, and if there's one country I know that can ride through this and we can do it together, it is South Africa.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned the fact about how well South Africa has done in the international arena with regards to umpires and officials and referees, because it really is a massive, massive feather in our caps to have been able to achieve so much for a relatively small country that has been in the international arena for a very short space of time since readmission. So, And Peter Wright is just another glowing example of how good we get it when we get it right. And what a guy, what a gentleman. And although I think he's got some very, very interesting stories, I'm looking forward to catching up with a drink or two and finding out a bit more about Russi.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's probably got some dirt on most players. So the players might be asking him to keep it down, but. Look, a gentleman, a scholar of the game, and a wonderful, wonderful example of a proud South African. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to having some more chats with Peter and some more chats with more guests. And, all we can do is make the most of this lockdown and bring you as much high-quality hockey content as we can.
Yeah, and I'm deviating a little bit, but I think we're going to throw it open to the public. But you and I have started this lockdown sports quiz. We've done it for our friends, and we had one last night, which proved to be very, very popular and really fun as well. And I think now that we know that we're in it for the long haul with regards to this lockdown, I reckon we should open it up a bit more and maybe put it out there for folks to join us.
Yeah, why not? I mean, look, we're here as long as my son is sleeping, which is fairly early. We here and we love sport. We love South Africans, and if we can do a little bit to just help people remove the crazy, then why not?
And we promise you that there are a lot of hockey questions featured. Although, I think you missed out last night. I don't think you asked one.
No, I did get one in.
Oh, did you?
I mean, I'll always get one in. But
good man.
Of course, I will always get one darts question in as well. So.
Oh, man. Brilliant, Ty. Well, here with starts, the next phase of the lockdown. But as always, Hockey the Podcast continues unabated. In fact, it actually picks up steam now because there's little else for us to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, by the time people hear it, it'll be a day apart. But how about we do another one right now?
I think so. Let's do it. Cheers, Ty. Catch up later.
Cheers.